With Chime's secure credit card, you can start improving your credit scores with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments. Get started at chime.com/build. The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A., members FDIC. Results may vary. See chime.com for details. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into
the home team.
And here we go.
All right, kicking into hour number two, it is the home team presented by Athens Technical College. Your passion, your future elevated. Chris Brame, Tyler Head, and Kevin Erickson, a full house here with you today. Jeff will be back with us tomorrow as we are here till 7. Ready to jump into today's 5 at 5, brought to you as always by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. And today with the 5 at 5, it is Kevin. And Kevin, you may fire when ready.
Yes, sir. All right, so for the first question, so for as long as I can remember, my experience at Sanford Stadium, when we lose or things aren't quite going our way, I always hear the rumbles throughout the crowd of whoever's the offensive coordinator's name is at the time.
True.
Dating back to, I guess, Bobo Schottenheimer. But that's been the talking point or the complaining point for the last couple of weeks for everybody. Everybody's been focused on Georgia's offense and its lack of production. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how worried are you about the offense for the rest of the season? And do you think a coaching change will happen if the offense doesn't start to turn it around and fulfill its potential?
You mean an offensive coaching change?
Yeah.
Yeah. On a scale of 1 to 10, how worried am I I would be definitely above a 5. I'm not all the way at just nuclear 10 or anything like
right.
that, but probably around, say a 6 or a 7. You know, we're over halfway through the season. Georgia does have a bye coming up, but in the last three home games, Georgia scored 23. And 17 and 21. So I don't know how much more Georgia's going to get out of the offense doing what Georgia's been doing with the offense in these next over this next month, where you play Florida and Jacksonville, come home and play Missouri, and then have to go to Auburn, and then you host Texas A&M. But I don't think James Coley's going to have 1 year and then is going to be thrown out. I know you would expect that, you know, Mike Bobo's time at Colorado State might be coming up, and I know a lot of Georgia fans, you talk about, it's funny, like, I remember when, yes, Georgia fans didn't like Mike Bobo, and now, like, oh, bring Bobo back.
Well, and yeah. in Bobo's last season, we had one of the highest scoring offenses in school history.
Yeah.
But people still wanted him gone.
Right.
And then we have Brian Schottenheimer the next year, and, you know, everybody was missing Bobo at that point.
Well, it's fun. Like, with Bobo, things began to turn for him once. Then it became, everyone hated Willie Martinez. He was the assistant coach that had the pitchforks aimed at him. And then it was Todd Grantham.
Yeah.
So eventually people realized, like, oh, Bobo's really good. And they liked him. So then it was the defensive coordinators that everyone turned on. And then Brian Schottenheimer was horrible, but that ended up lasting 1 year. And then, heck, I mean, even the last couple of years, Chaney was just drawing all sorts of criticism. And, I mean, no one was crying when he took that job at Tennessee and left, like it was a big loss or anything. But here it's taken, you know, half the season, and James Coley now is definitely under the gun. But for us here, I know our policy, even with when it was Coach Rick, and everyone always likes to crush the assistants, but for me, it always starts on top, and whatever plays Coley's calling and whatever offense they're running, that's a philosophy that Kirby wants, and it's a system that he wants to run. And so the questions really would ultimately start there, and how open he is to possibly doing things different on offense if Georgia needs to at some point. Yeah. Hey, maybe they won't. Maybe they won't lose another game. And like I said last week, that game last Saturday will just turn out to be a very good team that had a very bad day, and all will be well. And I'm and Georgia won Saturday 21-0, and so they routed another SEC East opponent. They're 6-1 and 3-1. We'll see what happens in a couple weeks in Jacksonville.
I agree with what you said, putting the level of concern probably around a 6 or 7 on a 1-10. We're a run first team. We know that. We've known that for years, ever since Kirby's been here. Even before he was here, that's always been our mantra. And with the amount of talent that we have on our offensive line and in the backfield, we could go through this next month of games running the ball 90% of the time and have amazing success and win these games by, you know, 2-3 scores each. Or we could run into really tough defenses like we know we're going to do with Florida, and they could stuff the run, and then we're forced to pass. And that's where the level of concern goes up a little bit more, because it just hasn't been there consistently enough. Obviously, we know Jake Fromm can make good throws. He can read a defense exceptionally well. But when you're talking about not having a guy like Cager out there and just not having enough reps and other established receivers out there right now, we don't quite have that same confidence in the passing game. Not that it couldn't be there, but we just haven't seen enough of it to be able to think we can fall back on it if we need to.
Yeah, well, maybe the you got two freshmen out there in Blaylock and Pickens, and maybe this will be a moment as you know, you hit that off week as a freshman for one of them, that that they'll just blast off all of a sudden and have bigger impacts than they have. But I know, I mean, Georgia certainly is in a position where anyone, you know, you're talking about, well, look at the attrition and everything lost to the draft and this and that. And like, how many teams would come back at you, or fans from other schools would say, like, between Demetrius Robertson, who was like a freshman All-American when he was in the for his freshman season at Cal, and then between Blaylock and Pickens, is like, we have 3 5 stars in your receiving core.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you're complaining about, like, you can't get anybody open.
Yeah, that's that's one of the things that keeps me a little bit more optimistic. I'd say my scale of 1-10 score is probably about a 5 or 6, just because I have a lot of faith in our talent and on offense, and the bye week to, you know, get things kind of sorted out. But if we want to beat these teams over the next 4 weeks, we're definitely going to have to play better than we have the past two.
Yeah, I think, like, the questions from the, like, this past week, it's just it was a rainy night and the ball was wet and Georgia did what it needed to do to win. I think those are things that fans, you know, might tell yourself or even ask, like, or the vanilla idea of things, because the alternative is to then ask yourself, well, maybe we're just not that good. And I don't think anyone wants to acknowledge that or even think that might be a possibility. So you got to come up with all these other things that are happening. And it's like, yeah, I mean, I get it. It was a rainy night, but I mean, Florida played in the same weather conditions and they threw 4 touchdown passes. And I think Trask threw 30-something passes. And it wasn't just like, hey, we're not even going to bother to try to do this. And then even like, well, we can't win if we throw 51 passes. And so we barely passed the ball at all. But in the end, we did win versus lose, but we scored 21 points versus 17 points. It's not like all of a sudden we weren't passing on Saturday and our offense was just explosive and we lit up the scoreboard. No, Georgia didn't run a play in Kentucky's territory until they shanked a punt in the third quarter.
Right.
So it's, you know, 51 passes got you a loss and 17 points, and then, you know, running the ball, eventually wearing them down, yes, in the fourth quarter on that one long 90-yard drive, whatever it was, the 96-yard drive, and basically definitely delivered that knockout punch. But, you know, that made it 21-0. I think Kentucky was – they'd been beaten once it was 7-0 because they couldn't complete a pass either.
Right. You look at the box score and you look at, you know, Fromm's pass attempts, you look at Swift's carries and his yards for carry and all that. And it looks like a game where we just dominated them, just grounded pounding them all game, but that doesn't really tell the tale of it. I mean, it wasn't like that at all.
No.
Well, and I think didn't Swift get most of his yards in that first half anyway, before we'd even scored?
Oh, I mean, it wasn't in that. Well, he had the 39-yard run on the one play drive, right?
Yeah.
And then.
Well, that was the first touchdown. But I feel like he had close to 80, 90 already by the time we got to halftime. So he got the bulk of his yards before we were even scoring any points.
Yeah, and or again, even running plays in their territory.
Right, again, we weren't even in their territory yet.
Yeah.
It's when Fromm was 8 for 11 for 28 like yards.
Something yard, yeah.
And also, you know, we go back a couple weeks ago playing Notre Dame. We didn't see Zamir White in that game. White only gets one carry against Kentucky on Saturday night. It's still kind of confusing to me what exactly we're trying to do with him.
Well, I liked the fact that we did, and well, Herrion didn't play the week before he was hurt.
Right.
And, I mean, Kirby's liked Herrion, and Herrion's been good. It's, I mean, even Kirby's pointed out with Herrion, sometimes, you know, as fans, you get caught up in like, well, this guy was rated this many stars or whatever. But like Herrion is, he's a really good back that maybe wasn't highly rated coming out of high school for whatever reason. But I thought one of the things Georgia's offense needed to do is just try and, you know, whittle down even the running back core and just get, because against South Carolina, it was just, there was like a constant rotation there where Swift would be in, and then all of a sudden you'd see Zamir, or you'd see, you know, Harry didn't play in that game. And Cook really has been kind of like oddly absent for a lot of the season. He hasn't.
I noticed that.
Yeah, he hadn't played as much or had as much of an impact as I think most people expected that he might have had. But I liked the idea. Like, DeAndre Swift is, he's the dude at running back.
Right.
And to make him kind of, he's the primary guy and have less of a rotation than there has been in the past. And he owns Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
So he was the SEC player of the week last year after playing them too. And that's 2 years in a row. He's just dialed it up on them. I guess that's why Mark Stoops said after the game that I recommend you go ahead and turn pro.
Get out of here. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. All right. Moving on to the second question. So in most cases, I hate the off week, even before Florida, just because I love watching Georgia football. But right now I like it because I think we need it to regroup a little bit. So what do y'all think Kirby Smart and the coaching staff are going to focus on anything, if they're going to focus on anything specifically this week and next week besides preparing for Florida to try to make us a better football team and giving us a good chance to win out?
I mean, I think one of the big things is you got to get guys, A, healthy.
Yeah.
And that's what the bye weeks are always useful for. I don't, you know, Tyson Campbell hadn't played in a while. Kinley's been banged up. It sounded like with Cager last week that he's a longer-term deal. I wouldn't expect him to be back even for the Florida game. But getting some, you know, getting healthier than the team has been would be a big thing. I still think the like special teams is something that's got to be addressed and worked on with the kicking game and the return game, because there was, you know, we muffed the opening kickoff and end up with poor field position. Blaylock, who had done a good job of at least catching kicks against South Carolina, let another one bounce on Saturday that cost us some field position. So if you look at the last two games, our average starting field position has just been, it's been woeful. And so for an offense that does not hit explosive plays, has been discussed at great length for much of the season, the deeper you're starting in your opponent's territory and you just got to like grind and grind and drive and drive, the more susceptible you are to eventually just bogging down and having to maybe settle for a field goal or being forced to punt or eventually just turning the ball over.
Or being scoreless at half.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, we've pretty much been talking about this entire show, figure out what you're going to do about the passing game. Again, we're obviously a run-first team, and against a team like Kentucky that we eventually wore down, running the ball pretty much the entire game worked out well. But Florida's a very good defense, and they've shown that this year. And if we get into that first quarter and they're shutting down the run game, you have no choice but to pass. And if you don't have it figured out by that point, you don't have a chance.
Well, as is pointed out, too, with the idea of, and even Kentucky was doing it, with their safety creeping up into the box, if these opposing defenses feel like they can handle the receivers just man for man, and those safeties can be dedicated to helping defend the run, that's where then Georgia's got to, you know, those guys have got to win some of those one-on-one battles, or Georgia's got to do some things to create some mismatches in the passing game or scheme to get guys open. And, you know, Fromm too. I know it's, you know, there have been enough little videos that have been thrown around of like, hey, look, this guy was open and Fromm didn't see him. So, I mean, right. Fromm's got to get better too at,
right, yeah,
going through the progressions and finding the guys that are open, if they are open, when they're open.
Right. I mean, even if those guys don't look at Twitter or anything like that, I'm sure they all hear us loud and clear. So I know they're going to be working on the.
I was gonna say, in this day and age, it's impossible to ignore the noise.
No. Oh, they know
hear
it.
They read it. They see it. They can tell us that they don't. They don't pay attention to it. They do, because it's impossible to avoid.
Yeah, and by the, like the thing is like no one's mad at the players.
No,
it always all comes back to it's the coach's job to put you in the position to succeed, and I think that's what a lot of people are seeing with the passing game right now. It's just that you just hear this constant where when things go wrong, it's because the players aren't winning their individual matchups. It's about hat on hat and winning those individual matchups. And so, you know, but you look at, you know, the offenses that are about, like, there's a lot of motion and about all of a sudden, hey, look, they've got a linebacker on our wide receiver and doing things like that, where you find these mismatches or you scheme guys to where they end up open. And that just has not been happening here for the last couple of games.
Yeah. Just getting healthy is one of the best things about the off week. And some of those guys that are kind of around the borderline, you know, like coming back ready to go, I think in the Florida game they'll give it a go. So now moving on from Georgia football for a second, I want to talk about the Atlanta Falcons. I don't know why, but what in the world do they do from here? 1-6, you know, Dan Quinn's most likely out, like you said earlier in the show. So I mean,
to me, it's like, how bad do you want your season to get? Like, I don't think if the Falcons fired Dan Quinn that they're going to win 9 straight games, finish 10-6, and make the playoffs. So, you know, there's the question of, like, well, do you want your season to be bad or you just want it to be an embarrassment? But I don't know how the Falcons can win and how they're being prepared on a week-by-week basis, when if you're a player, and I get it, you're a paid professional or whatever, and you'd think there might be there's some pride that goes into that. I get that part of it too, but there's also, well, like, you could, well, what is the point though? Because I know that this guy is getting fired, and if you're Dan Quinn, now how hard are you getting ready and preparing week in and week out when you know it doesn't matter? Because, A, you know you're not going to win 9 straight games and go 10-6 and do something that might be able to save your job. Everyone knows he's getting canned, including him, including the team. So it's just – it's a weird deal right now with where the Falcons are, that they haven't made this move that they are obviously going to make. So he still is showing up today, and he's giving press conferences like he's the coach of the team, which he is, but I mean, he can't have a ton of respect from his players right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you look at the history of Arthur Blank as an owner, I don't think he's ever fired a coach mid-season. Obviously, Bobby Petrino walked out on the team on his own in 2007. I think this may just be a case of just doing what he's always done and letting the season play out. And obviously, again, you know that they're not going to turn it around. They're not going to beat the Seahawks. They're certainly not going to beat the Saints. Because you're about to get into divisional play over these next couple weeks after you play the Seahawks and everything. I think it may just be kind of a case of let it play out, see what the end result is, and then move on from there. Because obviously, again, you fire Dan Quinn right now and you promote Cutter Mike Mularkey as the head coach. That's not going to improve anything. If anything, that's just going to make it worse.
Yeah.
So I guess you're leaning towards the better of the two worst case scenarios and just letting Dan Quinn finish it out. Because again, if you get rid of him, that's not going to help anything. And if you keep him, that's not really going to do much either.
Yeah. It's just like keeping Quinn though. It's then you're going to, what are you going to do? Go 1-15 and just really, I mean, you get a nice draft pick then. You know, maybe if there's some attempt to at least salvage something out of the season, you'd go ahead and get rid of them. But it's like, I can't think of a time where it's been so obvious, though, that a coach is being fired, to the point that, like, even the coach has to be aware of it.
Yeah.
The team has to be aware of it. And you're stuck in the status quo, though.
I think everybody has either got all their hands in tanking already, or, I don't know, Quinn should just, you know, step down if Arthur Blank's not going to fire him midseason, because, I mean, I don't know. It's going to happen either way.
Well, Quinn's probably not going to be the only one that's going to go here, too, because, right. Like, the Falcons have – what have they needed to do? They've needed to fix their pass rush, and they needed to fix their offensive line. So they've drafted Vic Beasley. They've drafted Tack McKinley. They spent basically their free agency resources and their draft picks this past year on the offensive line, and neither of those have been fixed. The Falcons don't. They didn't have a sack yesterday, did they?
They haven't had a sack since, I think, the Indianapolis
game. I think it was the third quarter of the Indy game. Going into this weekend, it was 242 defensive snaps.
If they go through the Seattle game without a sack, they'll be the first team in the history of the NFL to go five games without a sack.
All right, so there's that, and there then the off. I mean, I saw a photo today of Matt Ryan. There were five Rams that were basically hitting him simultaneously, and his arm was just, you know, the ball was just, you know, basically dropping to the ground, and it was, you know, it was just like this sad picture of Matt Ryan getting sacked, and it just summed up the lack of protection that he's had.
I just thought about this, because obviously Falcons play at Mercedes-Benz Stadium now, and everybody knows about how the PSLs and the season tickets and stuff work like that. You have people that are very invested in this team with buying PSLs and season tickets and stuff. I mean, because, again, this is all on Arthur Blank because he owns Mercedes-Benz Stadium. He's the one that made all of this happen. Maybe it's kind of a thing that he doesn't want to give off the perception that they're giving up, which is why week in and week out he keeps saying, I have faith in Dan Quinn. I'm sticking by Dan Quinn, because he doesn't want to admit failure when you know you have these people that are just investing thousands and thousands of dollars to watch a very bad football team.
Right.
You don't want to basically admit, "Yep, we're pretty bad."
I bet most of those people
come to our games.
Yeah, but I'll bet most of those people would want Dan Quinn fired right now.
Oh, they all do. I can guarantee you that. But it's more because obviously Arthur Blank's a businessman. He doesn't want to admit that he's failed at something until it's the absolute end of it and say, well, we didn't do so well, did we?
Yeah.
But I don't think he's going to cave midseason on it, which is why week in and week out they keep asking him, like, what you going to do about Dan Quinn? I still have confidence in him. We're going to see what happens. And that's just, you know.
Right.
That's a placeholder.
But meanwhile, like, we all know what's going to happen.
Oh, we all do.
Short of him saying, like, no, I'm not firing him, and he's going to be our coach again next year. And then, you know,
there might be some riots in the streets at that point.
But at least then maybe, like, the players would know, like, oh, well, all right then. We'll stay invested in that. I just don't get how you go out there every week knowing that you've got a lame duck coach.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of these guys, Howard, at this point, just kind of looking out for themselves.
Well, yeah.
Because, again, you got a clean house at this point. You're going to be getting rid of a lot of people. And some of these guys, especially for the guys like Vic Beasley, you know, they might not have a career in the NFL after this season.
And even all the assistant coaches that just know, like, we're just working for a lame duck head coach. And when the coach himself he's got to know, like, I know I am.
And like what he said in the post-game press conference yesterday, that they're now divvying up the defensive play calling. He's now pulled in some of those assistant coaches with him that – are also the reason that this defense is playing so bad.
Yeah.
All right, I got a couple more. So real quick, the Atlanta Hawks tipping off the 2019-2020 NBA season on Thursday against the Pistons. Who or what are you most excited to see from the Hawks this season? And do they make the playoffs?
No. Even though I think the Hawks were ahead of schedule with their rebuild, they were better last year than anyone thought. I still don't think they're going to be – they're going to make the leap to the playoffs, but maybe another, like, between 30-35 win season for them.
Yeah.
I think it's a slow process. If they make the playoffs, they're going to be a number 8 seed and they're going to get bounced pretty quickly. I wouldn't be shocked by that by any means. I'm not counting on it either. I guess more than anything, I'm looking at kind of the second year for a guy like Trae Young and just his progression there, and you know what the draft picks they got this year are going to look like and everything, and just, you know, taking steps in the right direction. You know, you can't, especially with the how far back they are from some of the other teams in the East. It's going to take a while to get there. I just want to see steady improvement.
Even as a Tar Heel basketball guy, I've been really high on Cam Reddish. I've always thought he was maybe the best out of those three to come out of Duke, but I don't know. We'll see. I think he's got a really good skill set that'll translate to the NBA. But I think it's a really exciting year because the expectations are kind of low for the Hawks, so they could easily outgrow the expectations and make the playoffs, surprise people. But even if they don't, it'll be all right.
And even if they don't, they're becoming a fun team to watch again, though, because they got a lot of young talent. I think their philosophy's in the right place. So it's at least not, you know, what it used to be. At least they're going in a better direction. It's going to take some time to get there, but they're taking steps.
Right. Well, and the I like that they run one of those high octane, a lot of possessions offenses.
It's fun to watch.
Yeah. And Trae Young was I was with the Luka Doncic, and they both worked out they were both really good.
Yeah.
And
no, I'm fine with it. But all right, last one. Despite your current level of confidence in Georgia football right now, I feel like I have faith in both of you that y'all both think that we can win out. At least a part of you thinks we can win out and win the national championship. So, say we do that, what's the main reason that you think we can do that?
I don't think we can. I'm a downer.
I don't think
we're winning out and winning the national championship.
I wanted to say if you still think we can.
If I did, the main reason we can do it is Georgia is just as talented as anybody in the country. You look at the offense and you got with Thomas and Wilson, Fromm, Swift. The defense is hyper talented, if not young, but. And I still think that Georgia too, the rest of the way in the schedule, is the certainly a cut above just about everybody else in the East. But honestly, remembering watching Florida in Week One against Miami versus now, I think everyone has to admit that we went from Georgia's going to crush those guys to oh my gosh, I hope we beat the Gators. But that would be it. I mean, Georgia is still – it's my confidence isn't that shaken. I think there's a few things that need to be tuned up. I think you have to admit the offense definitely has, for whatever reason, has suddenly just – it is slid backward. And, you know, why is that?
I have confidence that we still can. If we do, it'll be because this defense plays absolutely lights out from here on out.
Right.
Because, again, we're still a lot of questions with the offense, still trying to figure out the passing game, but we've seen it from a lot of these teams that Alabama's won national championships with. If you just have a knockdown, drag-out, lights-out defense, your offense can be mediocre and you can still win.
My reason is Swift because I was thinking, my logic behind it was that it's a given that our defense is going to be lights-out, which they have been for most of the year. But if Swift's having a day, then the passing game opens up. If we have a passing game, you know. But, I think the defense has done a really good job all year. And as long as Swift is, you know, being productive, I think we've got a shot. Maybe not against Ohio State, right, Brain? But, no.
Well, that would be one of the most Georgia things of all time is to run into those guys at some point.
All right.
All right, there's the 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. It's a halftime. We will break and plenty more to get to. We'll cover.
With Chime's secure credit card, you can start improving your credit scores with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments. Get started at chime.com/build. The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. Results may vary. See chime.com for details. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.